listening to the Everything You Want to Know About Therapy But We're Too Afraid to Ask podcast with your host, Jessica Strang, and your co-host, Jennifer Trevelli. If you've ever wanted to start therapy but didn't know where to begin, you've come to the right place. In this podcast, we will offer, what you call Therapy 101 by interviewing experts in the field and asking them anything and everything you want to know about therapy before you make that first appointment. In this episode, we are excited to welcome Dr. Wendy Paskowitz. Dr. Paskowitz is not only a licensed clinical psychologist, but she is also the Vice President of Academic Affairs at Adler University, where she is responsible for training and education of future mental health professionals. Dr. Paskowitz has been working in higher education for the past 20 years, and we are so excited to have her on today. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Paskowitz, and let's dive right in. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for inviting me. I'm really excited to talk with the two of you today.
We are so excited. And with such an illustrious career that you've had, we want to start off right away by asking, how did you get here? When did you begin to study psychology? Like, when was the first inkling of what you wanted to study?
What a great question. You know, I remember when I was younger and I was in a car ride with my dad. I was a teenager and I was trying to figure out, you know, what do I want to go to college for? And I said, I really want to work with kids. I just love working with young people. And mm-hmm. He said, we went through all these things like, oh, a teacher? No. A doctor? No. You know, like a medical. And I said, no. And he kind of said, you know, well, have you thought about psychology? And I kind of thought, well. So I ended up taking a psychology class in high school and then went to Michigan State to get my Bachelor of Science in psychology. And then went on to get my PsyD, my doctorate in clinical psychology from the Illinois School of Professional Psychology in Chicago.
Wow.
So yeah, I really wanted to just work with kids, adolescents, families, and do clinical work. Yeah.
That's great. When you were going through, you know, you're an undergraduate studying psychology, getting your undergraduate degree, kind of what helped you make the decision to move on to graduate school?
What a good question. I knew I wanted to practice. I wanted to do therapy. I wanted to, I knew that I needed a degree, a higher degree, in order to do the things I wanted to do, like do therapy, do psychological assessments, things like that. So I first started in a master's program to get my footing because I was young. I was a young mm-hmm. undergrad. I think I graduated mm-hmm. when I was like 21 and went into a master's program at ISPP. And then after 1 year realized, you know, in order to do the kind of psychological assessment kind of things that I like, I needed to get my doctorate. So I got accepted to the doctorate program and just kind of evolved from there. I always thought I was going to do clinical work. I really mm-hmm. thought that I would just be a therapist and things like that. But then I did my postdoc at an agency that had like an outpatient center. It had a day mm-hmm. school, a therapeutic residential setting mm-hmm. for pretty traumatized kids that had gone through a lot of abuse and neglect and things like that. And it was really, I don't know about the two of you, but sometimes when you do a ton of clinical work, like back to back, and you don't have a lot of breaks, it just kind of burns you out.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I started doing more administrative stuff. We had a practicum and an internship training program. So for psychology students in graduate school, they would come to us for supervised training. And I was supervising and doing things like that, getting more into administration and helping to oversee some of the training programs and just kind of remembered how much I love education and just helping to train the next generation of psychologists. And so I started drifting more and more toward administration and away from so much clinical work. And mm-hmm. Ended up applying for the associate director of training position at my alma mater at ISPP and went back into higher ed and started teaching and doing administration and clinical placements mm-hmm. for students in the community and just kind of fell in love with being in academia and And so that's how I got to where I am now. It kind of evolved. I would have really never, I didn't see it coming.
And Dr. Paskowitz, it sounds so interesting to me because I feel like what your experience is like is so similar to so many people working in the mental health field, is realizing that I need an additional, additional education. So I need more graduate school. But then it's almost like once you're there, it sounds like you unlock all these doors so that you can go in so many directions. And that's great. I think it's fantastic, because if you get burned out, or if you're like, I really want to try something different, I'm going to put clinical work on the side over here, I can try these things. Was that frightening to then become, like, let's say, for example, like a teacher, or like an educator? Because I know I've had a little experience in that. I know Jen has done a million and one conferences. What was your experience like to shift to do that suddenly?
Oh yeah, that is so true, because I got my doctorate when I was 26, and I was probably like one of the youngest in my class. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. So, and I think I kind of look young. I'm glad for that now. Then I was like, everybody thought I was a student. So it was like, are you a student? What class do you have today? I was like, I'm teaching you today. No, I'm kidding.
Oh my gosh. But, you know, I'll be honest with you really quickly. That happened to me once at Adler. I was in the middle of teaching, and a student walked in late and said, is the professor here yet? And I said, I am the professor. And it was like, you could hear a pin drop, but it took a lot of guts to say that.
Oh yeah. And I think as women, I think that that question may or may not come to a younger looking man, but it'll come to a younger looking woman, which is frustrating.
Exactly.
Yes, I can't remember where we were going with that, but,
was it scary? Was that,
oh, yes.
I mean, like, secretly, you know, you want to put out a good front. We talk about imposter syndrome a lot, Jen and I, but did mm-hmm. you want to put out a good front? Like, I know what I'm doing here.
Oh, 100%. And I over-prepared every class that I ever taught. Like, mm-hmm. I just laugh now when I think back on the amount of time that I put into preparing kind of assignments and readings, yeah. and I probably, you know, killed half the students in my classes with the amount of things I asked of them, because I was anxious. So I was like over assigning. So just over time, you kind of relax into it and realize, you know, this is more about me than it is about them. And once you kind of get more confidence and kind of get your footing, and it helps when you're a younger, I think, faculty member to have mm-hmm. peers that you can talk to about mm-hmm. their classes and what they're doing and what they're not doing. And so, yes, and I get anxious. I still get a little anxious when I present at conferences, and it just takes so much practice.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't know about the two of you, but I think the more you do it, I think this is just life, but the more you do something, the easier it gets, or you just get better at faking it until.
Absolutely.
That's true.
Absolutely. I know the first time I had to like present in front of like a conference or in front of a group of people, I was like, maybe I'll wake up with laryngitis. Like maybe I'll have a medical excuse why I can't do this. And now it's like, when it happens, it's like, oh, I have it. I have to do this in like a couple hours. And it's like, I don't need as much like prepping. I don't think about it for days before or weeks before, or even months before it happens. It does come a little bit easier. You do get better at like, people will be like, oh, you didn't look anxious up there at all. And I was like, you have no idea what was happening internally.
Exactly.
During your time. Right.
Exactly. Even today I was like, oh, maybe I'll wake up with a sore throat. I haven't done a podcast yet. Still, you know, 20 years in, and I'm still, you know, it's just, you know, you want to kind of sound like you know what you're doing. So,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, and I thought you brought up a really good point earlier too, in talking about how after doing, you know, such intense clinical work for a year, you know, in a short period of time, that we do tend to burn out. We do tend to kind of feel that. And I think it's a good, like you brought up a good idea that psychology and being in graduate school or, you know, pursuing higher education in the psychology field doesn't necessarily mean having to do clinical work, doesn't necessarily mean having to see patients all the time or work with clients individually or work in the clinical setting, that there is this other side to it as well.
100%. I think that that's the beauty of the field of behavioral health. You know, people with master's degrees and doctorate degrees can do so many different things. You can do some research, you can do some teaching, You can do some clinical work. You can do some administration. You know, I know I was going to talk about this a little more later, but some of our graduates have gone on to do some political work, policy making, and just there are so many things you can do with a degree in psychology and related fields.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this, Wendy, or Dr. Baskett, sorry.
It's okay. Call me Wendy. It's been long enough now. We've known each other a lot.
I know. It's been a long time. I don't want to say how many years, but it's been a long time. One of the things I wanted to ask about was just that jumping off point where you're talking a little bit about the differentiation between degrees. And given that your work in higher education at Adler and basically, you know, the place where graduates, people go to learn about how to become professionals in the field. One of the biggest questions that I get as, you know, a private practice person is, what's the difference between your PsyD degree? What does that mean? What all these letters mean? You know, I don't know the difference. Mm-hmm. So could we talk a little bit about that? The difference between, let's say, a PsyD and a master's, and kind of how at least at Adler, where you work, how that's differentiated.
Sure. I mean, I'm just going to just say a little bit about Adler to give some context of what I'm going to say about the differentiation of degrees. But so Adler, it's a specialized graduate level institution. It's not for profit. And we have campuses in Chicago, Vancouver, and online. We're relatively small with like about 1,800 students. And the thing that's so specific and why I want to talk about this now about Adler mm-hmm. is that we really work to train students to advance social justice. That is a key part of who we are, as the two of you know, as mm-hmm. alumni.
Right.
A big part of what we focus on is making sure that our students advance social justice, both during their time as their students and then in their careers after they graduate. So that looks like hands-on experience and practica, their curriculum. And so I say that because I think that doctorate programs and master's programs, at least at Adler, a lot of the thrust of what we're trying to do with students is to really get them to think differently than kind of the more traditional approach to psychology and mental health, which has in the past been so focused on individuals and what's happening within one person and not paying enough attention to context and mm-hmm. everything else going on around them. I would say that the field of counseling, and I think social work, has always been, in my opinion, better at appreciating the different variables that impact people's mental health and wellness.
Mm-hmm.
They've always taken more systems, kind of look at the family, mm-hmm. look at the community, look at everything around them. And I think psychology has been slower to get there. I think psychology has evolved and you're seeing more training programs that are really focusing on social justice, diversity, making mm-hmm. sure that we really understand, regardless of your degree, that you really have to look at the whole person.
Mm-hmm.
And so just that's kind of a background philosophical around kind of what's important about the field of health, behavioral health and wellness.
Mm-hmm.
But doctorate degrees versus like a master's degree, and with that I include an LCSW, you know, with a doctorate degree, you just have more supervised training. Typically, mm-hmm. a PhD or PsyD, which are both the curriculum is more similar than ever before in psychology. It used to be like the PhD in psychology is just for research and the PsyD
right.
is mm-hmm. just to do clinical work. And the accrediting body that the American Psychological Association has really kind of helped to with that bridge now, when accredited programs all have the same criteria they need to meet. So you don't see such a difference, although there's definitely an emphasis on applied clinical work more still with PsyDs than PhDs, I would say.
And just to pause for one quick second, just for our listeners, the PhD, when you're referring to that, is the Doctorate of Philosophy in Psychology,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And then PsyDs are the Doctorate of Psychology. And so that's
correct.
one of the things that I also have to sometimes explain. And then I think to myself, did I explain it well? You know, like, am I giving the right answer here?
Yeah. And it's a a frequent question. I think the important thing for the public to know is that both of these degrees lead to the same licensure and the ability to do very similar things. While you might see kind of a flexing of the muscle of, you know, maybe psychological assessment and clinical therapy work with PsyDs and PhDs, maybe more teaching and more research and scholarship. But I've seen more and more people graduate from both different degree programs with such a mix. It's hard to say.
That's interesting. You know? That's really interesting. Yeah. And then what I always thought of, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I always thought of in the programming, at least at Adler, was the difference between masters, again, like you said, supervision and additional years of supervision for the PsyDs, but also PsyDs are able to administer psychological exams. Does that still hold true?
Yeah.
Okay.
It does. That is still, I mean, it's, you know, you've got, yeah, for the doctorate programs, you've got 4 to 5 years of in-depth clinical practice, assessing and treating more severe mental health conditions. Master's level folks are 2 to 3 years of education and supervised experience. But really, once you're out, I would say 5 to 10 years as a counselor or therapist, I think master's and doctorate level clinicians and therapists are kind of on the same. Experience gives you a ton. Mm-hmm, I mean, sure. Education gives you something, but then the experience doing the work. So I know a ton of extremely talented LCSWs and master's level counselors that are excellent therapists, as well as doctoral level folks. But you're right. I think the doc level people do more assessment. And also you might see them teaching because a lot of graduate or undergrad institutions, well, graduate in particular, require a doctorate to teach at that level. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I would agree with that. I think once kind of you're out in the field, it does kind of, things do tend to, your experience and what you've been working with really tends to shine through, and not so much kind of the training that you've had. I think the training kind of helps to build your foundation, but the experience that you gather through the years really kind of makes who you are as a therapist or a counselor.
Yes, I would agree with that. Definitely. You know, I think too, like LCSWs, sometimes I probably get one of my bigger questions when people say like, oh, I'm looking for a therapist. What are all these letters behind their names and how do I pick? And I tend to just to really encourage them to look for people that are licensed and to look for people with, you know, kind of how people write their bios often in kind of what they do. So do they treat the kind of things that you're suffering from or that you're looking for your kid or whatever, you know, anxiety or depression or trauma, things like that. That helps a lot with that experience. But I think that, you know, social workers in the past, I think have been thought of kind of on a narrow way as like caseworkers or case managers, you know, referring people to where they can get their needs met, connecting them to resources. But that is not, the LCSWs, I think they have tracks of being practitioners, being case managers. Mm-hmm. So it's really expanded from, I think, the tradition, like the old school way of thinking about an LCSW. What do you think? What have you heard?
Yes, I would agree with that. I think having worked in a hospital system for a long time now, we tend to see a lot of LCSWs who kind of start through the hospital system. And I think it is because I think for a long time, it was kind of their case managers. They work in the hospitals, they work inpatient. And it really seems to have shifted quite a bit within like the last 10 to 15 years, I've noticed that they really do have different tracks and they have different experiences. But a lot of times, a lot of them will go into private practice and work as counselors and therapists and can provide the same quality of treatment as the other levels as well.
Right. Right.
You know, and then myself being in private practice, I don't have a lot of contact with a lot of people, you know, just and different, you know, practitioners, but I know a lot of them that have masters and PsyDs, and I think that equally as talented, and if they can connect with clients, I think that was the most important thing. I let people know if they're asking for referrals. But I guess one of the things that is something that I've seen a lot of, I'm on a listserv with a lot of clinicians in Illinois. And one of the things that it's kind of my pet peeve is when people say, I need a seasoned therapist for such and such person. And I mean, mm-hmm. other than like on my food, you know, I'm not a fan of it. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that, because I feel like it's such a disservice to people that are just coming out of the field to say, okay, everyone but you newbies, you know, because we were all new, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? That's how, that yeah, way I think right. about it. And, right. and I see students coming out of these institutions as amazing as Adler, having so much knowledge that I do not have. I have to go to, you know, get my CUs to do that stuff, you know? So I'm wondering, you know, if you guys have any thoughts on seasoned or newbie, you know, as we're looking through, you know, if the different types of therapists that people can find.
Yeah, that's a good point. I have mixed feelings about it. I mean, I hear your point that you have to, new clinicians, you know, need to be able to see clients, sure. and clients need to be seen. And there's particularly, I have a couple of thoughts about this, you know, yeah. like there are clients out there that are, we need more therapists of color. We need yes. more diversity represented in the fields of health and wellness around ability, race, ethnicity, mm-hmm. LGBTQ, yes. you know, and so as the newer generation is coming up and we're starting to see more diversity amongst the graduates, we need to get them out there mm-hmm. and working with clients right away, because you've got, you know, a Black client may well want to see a Black mm-hmm. therapist, but they're short in demand. And
absolutely.
So the more we can do is to get them trained and out there and have culturally competent graduates coming up and out. That's important. And we need to get them to work right away.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. That being said, I do think that there are some cases that are too complicated and too complex for the brand new grad.
Sure.
So I don't know, that whole seasoned though, I think that's code for like maybe
it's gray hair.
There's something else there, right? Hair.
Yeah, that's how I see it, and I get right. so
it's
turned
not like
off
we're
by
talking
it.
About yeah.
yes,
and I'm just yeah. like, you know, because it completely takes away that possible new experience, new information that person has graduated with, you know, new in the career, and also that it takes away from the fact that maybe they have that experience. Like for example, coming out of grad school, Jen and I both had a lot of experience with domestic violence. Not mm-hmm. a lot of people always have that, right? But yeah, if you're looking for a seasoned therapist in domestic violence, well, good luck. You know what I mean? Like because it's sometimes you can't find somebody, and so. I see your point, and I think it's interesting, you know, seasoned newbie. I always tell people, look for the connection, you know,
right.
a lot of the people have bios on Psychology Today and other websites and ways to find them. And people offer 10-minute consultations to talk to them. And if you can hear in their voice that they can connect with you, that's, you know, check it out is what I tell people. And sometimes you have to check out a couple, you know, it's mm-hmm. kind of like Cinderella's shoe. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't always fit. And then when it does, it does. You know,
right. And I would hope that if at any, you know, a therapist at any level, if they're working with a patient or a client and really feels that this is something that they're not equipped, they don't have the experience mm-hmm. to handle, they're not equipped, they don't know really kind of what's the best course of treatment for them, that they would help that client seek services elsewhere, help them get connected, rather than kind of keeping them in treatment, knowing that, oh, this is not something, I'm not seasoned in this area. I don't know right. much about it. I would hope that they would take that time to really help connect them with somebody who was more appropriate for them.
Right, for sure. And this is one of the things that I wish people knew about seeking out clinical services, is that you're interviewing a therapist. Like part of this process is goodness of fit.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's okay if you go see someone and it just doesn't feel right, or it's not a good match, like that you could see yourself opening up to this person, or there's just something about the communication style or the vibe, it's
right.
okay to go meet with someone else. I actually encourage people to try and set up, like, if you're trying to find a therapist, go make two different appointments with two different people and see, or like you said, you know, kind of if they've got the ability to have that consultation session or whatever. Because if you, you know, that is the most powerful part, is the relationship. And if you don't have a good fit and you don't have the right match, it's not going to get you where you need to go as much.
Right.
So you have choice, and you shouldn't feel like you just have to, like, well, I've already met with this person and told them half my story.
Right.
You
know, right.
Do I have to stay?
And that's really hard, because I think that sometimes, you know, I'll get calls, you know, being in private practice, and maybe we do a little bit of an email or we do a phone consultation, and people still, it's still a big bridge to jump over to actually start the work, you know, and that's okay. I always tell people, any step that you take towards therapy, however it is, whether you actually start it or not, is a great step, and maybe you'll continue with it or not. One thing that we did get, Dr. Paskowitz, was a listener question, was about life coaches. And I don't know a lot. I just know, I didn't see that degree offered. So I you know, and so I'm just kind of going by what I know, which is, you know, not always everything. What are your thoughts and anything, to comment on life coaching?
I don't really know what kind of training one would get to be a life coach, to be honest with you. I would hope that somebody who puts up those credentials would be able to kind of talk about what qualifications they have to provide that. I don't know. I guess I don't have much to say about that. I'm guessing that it's about setting goals for oneself and assessing career. You know, maybe it's assessing career inventories or things like that. I'm just guessing at this point. So.
Jen, what do you think?
I would agree with Dr. Paskowitz. I don't know very much about life coaching either, but that's kind of in my head how I've always thought of it as you know, somebody who kind of is there to kind of help you set those goals for yourself. Like, you're at an impasse in careers, or you don't know what you want to do with, you know, career-wise, and kind of helping you set those goals. But maybe that's something, Jessica, that we can look into having somebody who does have a background in as a life coach on our podcast to learn more information about them.
I think that would be really great. Because again, I don't know anything about it, but I know it's out there. Because I mean, I guess according to the Real Housewives shows, I know everyone's a life coach. I'm like, wow, and what's going on? You know,
it's so true.
Yes, I've heard. I mean, I do hear a lot of people talk about, like, oh, my life coach suggested this. And like, sometimes I'm like, oh, I should probably ask. And sometimes it's like, oh, I don't want to sound like I have no idea what they're talking about.
I mean, maybe I should call you my life coach, Jen, because I feel like you kind of are. I'm always asking. You're like my touchstone. Like, what do I do next, Jen? I don't know. But
that's funny.
And, you know, yeah. So maybe you've been a life coach this whole time.
Maybe.
And you just didn't even know it, you know?
Maybe you should interview each other and to do that.
I think we did. It went like left really quick.
You know, one of the things that I wanted to just comment on is we've been talking a lot about like psychology and counseling and LCSW, but there are some other degree areas that I think are good for the public to know about, like at Adler.
Yes.
We have a master's in counseling and art therapy. So you've clinicians that really use art to help people express themselves and to, you know, that modality. There are couple and family therapists that have their own accrediting body and process for licensure. There's a counselor education and supervision. So people who get their doctorates to do more teaching, supervision, advocacy work. You know, we've got forensic mental health to focus on the correctional system and those that want to work in that area. Rehabilitation counseling.
Oh, what is that about?
That's a great degree. So that is working with people who have some form of disability, and we really flip it to talk about abilities. And so it's maybe working with traumatic brain injury clients or people who have other kinds of physical kind of challenges, mm-hmm. that would just kind of working with their mental health and wellness and their ability and focusing on their strengths.
Wow.
And putting themselves before the disability instead of, you know, like, you know, some people I think focus on one's challenges to ability versus them as mm-hmm. a person. So putting the mm. person first. So, and then we have sport and human performance.
Tell us more about that. Sorry.
Yeah,
I've always been fascinated. I know that you've had this track for a long time, and I just, you know, I don't know, I was just busy doing my own track. So I want to know more. Yeah.
It's a master's degree. So it's a master's degree in sport and human performance. And we just transitioned to create a new degree that is not a counseling focused. It's more about mental skills training, performance enhancement. You know, when we started the sport degree programs at Adler, people questioned, they're like, how is that mission consistent with social justice? Like, are you training people to go work with rich athletes? And, you know, not at all, actually. So the hope for our sport and health programs is really to have clinicians and then people who are practicing but not doing clinical work to be working in the communities and helping to develop healthy programs, physical activity programs, working with high schools mm-hmm. and elementary schools with young athletes
to
help them perform to the best of their ability. Yeah. So we really challenged when the curriculum was created, like, don't be creating this for people to think they're just going to go out and work with the Bears or, you know, the Blackhawks. That's not, we want to see more health and wellness mm-hmm. in our communities. So how can we dig in and get to those elementary schools or those junior highs that are those club sports that don't have kids talking about relationships and mental skills and the importance of teamwork, mm-hmm. you know, things like that. So it's a pretty cool degree. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I just want to keep our, you know, focus on other programs. We also have a master's degree in public policy and public administration to help students think more about, you know, how they can get into policy, creating the policies that help create healthy communities. It's interesting. We had a graduate actually who said in the public policy degrees, like, I came here to get my degree because I want to be the mayor of my hometown.
Oh,
I'm going to go back and run for public office. I was like, yes.
Wow, that is incredible.
That is.
I mean, because all the information, especially of how to work with people, social justice, and just understanding of human behavior, and then to do that, that's excellent. Mm-hmm. Why isn't everybody in public office doing this?
Well, it's something that's so needed. I think it's really, and to be able to have, I think this field of psychology and behavioral health is huge. And mm-hmm. like sometimes you look at it and people really only think of certain like bubbles that form from that or certain offshoots from that. But it really, I mean, there's so many different things you can do and so many options for somebody mm-hmm. who's looking to get into the field. And it like
100. Yeah. 100%.
And I feel like it gives me this like new sense of hope for our future that these yes. programs are offered and people are in them. And like, if this gives me this new sense of hope.
I agree. And I think that the time, you know, I mean, we're in the middle of three different mm-hmm. pandemics right now. There's the COVID, there's racial injustice, and there's economic
mm-hmm. yes.
Troubles, all of us. And so we're seeing actually an uptick in our enrollments because I think it's really activated students to want to come. I think they're drawn to the social justice mission, particularly at this time in history, that they really want to kind of get at these systems, things that are happening in our country mm-hmm. and internationally, the kind of things that perpetuate injustice, mm-hmm. inequality, division, and people want to challenge that now and make a different future for this country. And so I know that sounds like, what? Like, why is a mental health like institution? But that's kind of the way we see at it, like to get at it, to remove the barriers to health and well-being, you need to work with individuals, mm-hmm. communities, organizations. We all have to pull together and tackle these kinds of higher, it's bigger than just one person.
Absolutely. So absolutely.
That's kind of our angle on things. So hopefully I have hope too. I feel, when I think about that, I feel more hopeful. Yeah. Yeah.
So Dr. Pastor, what do you think is the most frequently asked question that you get either personally or professionally about therapy or psychology or about the programming at Adler, anything?
I think that, you know, one of the things that I get asked about the most is it kind of falls in the area of, should I really go to therapy or should I get counseling or, you know, people don't really go, it's the stigma. Mm-hmm. I think that there's this still stigma of mental health and going to get, like, it's, I think we've come a long way, but I think there is still challenges. And so the questions I get, it's almost like this little secret, you know, yes. Like one parent whispers to another, you know, like, I think my kid's got some stuff going on that, you know, I think they need to see a therapist.
Yes.
You know, like whispering. And I say, wow, you know, of course I can help you find some recommendations and places, you know, like, half the kids I know have been in therapy or half their families have been, they're like, what? You would never know. It's right. Just people aren't talking about the value of it or they still feel some shame around it. But no lie, I know a ton of people that are professionals, successful kids that are, you know, little rock stars, but there are things that are tough and can challenge. And so I think the more that we can all talk about seeking mental health care being a sign of wellness and self-care, the better off we will all be. I don't know if you're still hearing some of this as well.
But absolutely. I think that is in part, Jessica and I, through this past year, as we were talking, was something that really seemed to just kept coming back to. And that's in part why we decided to start this podcast, is to kind of help figure out a way to maybe take away some of that stigma a little bit. I don't know that, you know, we'll be able to do a whole lot of that, but really to just kind of find a way to normalize going to therapy, that it's okay, that a lot of people do it. I mean, I know in just trying to help people get connected with therapists in the community, that they're booked, their schedules are, you know, a lot of offices, a lot of practices have waiting lists to get in. And so people are using them, but there's still this like, well, yeah, I see a therapist, but I'm not, like you said, like they'll whisper it or they're not, it's not like, they're not going to talk about it. Like, oh yeah, I went to go see my primary care physician this past week. Like we don't whisper that when we talk about it.
Totally. You know, what's funny is like, that's absolutely true. So we did wanted to start the podcast to demystify therapy. And because I was personally in private practice was getting a lot of questions, like, especially from first time clients, like, what should I even be here? I don't want to take someone else's spot. And I'm just like, you're not, if I have the opening, there's not like, you know, it's first come first serve, you know, if it fits, but also, you know, that the conversation needs to be had to talk more about just, here's an option. Mm-hmm. Like I always say, if my foot was broken or something's going on, I would go to my physician or a podiatrist or whoever was specialized in that field. Then when it comes to, I'm having, you know, these feelings of sadness or I'm having problems with my spouse or I just need to vent, you know, because I feel like there's no, sometimes you don't even have any diagnostic criteria to have to go to therapy. You just want to go. There's always a spot for you there that always makes sense. And I have a group of girlfriends that one day we're just quite openly talking about their therapist and would I help them find a therapist? And I'm like, this is the first time as an adult that I've had other adults admit to me that they go to therapy without, you know, without wondering, wow, am I analyzing them? Because I'm usually not. I'm having a glass of wine when I'm with my girlfriends. You know what I mean? Like I'm not thinking about anything else, you know, but it was so refreshing and it felt so like a shift, especially, you know, these girlfriends are a tiny bit younger than me. You know, just a little bit, but it feels like it just culturally, there's a shift of, I go to therapy or I talk to my kid goes to therapy or we go to couples counseling. I love hearing that. And it's just such a huge shift, I think, in the last couple of years.
Yeah. And I think to your point, you know, I also hear people say like, well, I go to therapy, but I'm not crazy.
Right.
It's like, you don't have to be like, I don't know what that means. Like, to thank your you. Mind of what being crazy means, but no, I mean, I know people going for all different reasons. It doesn't mean that you're, you know, kind of like,
there's something wrong with you.
I mean, that there's something wrong with you, or that there's something really that traumatic, or it's just, for all different reasons. The other area that I was going to ask the two of you about is, I've always seen throughout time that parents don't always understand within schools kind of what their rights are and what they can do to advocate for their kids. I think psychological assessment is underutilized from my perspective.
Agreed.
You still see, I mean, up through graduate school, students with undiagnosed learning disabilities or challenges because either they couldn't afford to get a testing or nobody flagged it.
Right.
So I'm curious to know, do you get many people kind of talking about how to get psychological testing for, like, if they've got a learning disability or attention deficit or things that would provide them accommodations to do better in their work if they're adults or school as kids?
Well, I can answer just for private practice. So I don't have the time to do testing, but I frequently get this. I'd say maybe once a week I get emails about, you know, do you do the testing? And I'll have to say no, but I always refer to a couple of group settings because I always think that group practices will offer just more time and more therapists that will be able to do that. I do see it quite often that, you know, parents, the burden falls on the parents to figure this out, and then they don't know what they're doing. You know what I mean? Because I wouldn't know unless I was in this field, I would not know if my kid needed something, if it wasn't already flagged by somebody in school. And I think schools have gotten better. There's some schools that have a long ways to go, and they'll fight you tooth and nail to get you just even the most basic of services. But I think that, you know, just having parents reach out to psychologists and just even asking the question, like, do you do the testing? Or I think this is what's happening, or my kid seems to be faltering in this area. And then even if it's, you know, unfortunately, like for me, a rejection, like I don't do the testing, but I always offer up referrals to people that they can go to because they need it. You know, they need to just know, just like, you know, if I had COVID or not, like I need to know, like I need to take the test and I need to know. And similarly, if I have an issue with the way I'm looking at things or processing or learning, I'd want to know because it's going to affect, you know, what the next couple of years for me in school is going to be.
And I think it's hard because I think unless the like student or the person is struggling to the point that it's impacting their performance in school, a lot of times it doesn't like get noticed by teachers. So unless they're acting out in the classroom or like their grades were doing well and now all of a sudden, you know, they're failing classes. I think if there's this group of individuals who are struggling internally with their learning, but they figured out a way to kind of just get by, and it's putting so much like stress and strain on them, and that doesn't tend to get noticed, I think, by schools, or even sometimes parents may not be aware of what to look for. I know I've worked with a lot of primary care doctors and will get this question from the primary care doctors and asking, can we help, you know, can you help them get connected with a psychologist for testing? They might need learning disability assessment, or, you know, I'm not sure if there is ADHD or if there's something else bigger going on. Can you see about help finding them resources to help them get connected for testing? And then we'll oftentimes hear from the family that their next barrier then is insurance, and insurance wants them to do all this other stuff before they get approval for testing. And so sometimes I think then it just becomes, well, it's too overwhelming for them.
Too much work.
Yeah. It is a lot of work. It is. You know, when I think about frequently asked questions or one of like common questions about, you know, one of the things that I'm curious what the two of you might have to say about this is that at Adler University, you know, the legacy of the institution is Alfred Adler, who was a psychiatrist actually, but he talked a lot about social change to improve community health. And I think that students say, well, if I come to Adler's, all I'm going to learn Adlerian psychology. And, you know, I want to learn about other theories or other ways of doing work. And clearly at Adler, you know, while Adler's philosophies and thinking about individual health not being tied to one's environment and the health of the community is important, all that good stuff.
Right.
We don't, you know, we know that students come and learn about different approaches to treatment and things like that. So Adlerian is more about kind of philosophically kind of the grounding of our institution and our training. But did you ever run into that when you were a student at Adler and when you interviewed for practicum or internship, or even now, do you apply some of those theories and practices in your work?
I want to say that people, you know, I'm going to date myself. I'm old. people asked me this a long time
it's
ago.
It's been a minute. I know.
And so people would ask me in the past, you know, what is Adlerian therapy or whatever, when, especially if I go to like a bigger place for like a practicum interview or something like that. But most people were aware of Adler at the time, like the school actually that I was at and the theory obviously that went with it. No, there was an awareness. I didn't feel like everything that I, when I left Adler, that's all I knew about because of a couple of things. I did take other classes, you know, like I, about CBT. I know Jen did as well. She did her certificate in CBT and I didn't do that, but I did take classes. And I remember also having other interests. And then when I was in practicums, that's the wonderful thing about graduate school is that you have to do practicums. You have to do internships because you have to see other ways of how you can use this degree and other people's theoretical orientations. And in one of the places that I was at, that Jen was at too, because we're literally like a salt and pepper shaker. We come as a set. And so we were somewhere where we had two different supervisors, and one was very Ericksonian, wouldn't you say so? I mean, it's, yes. I almost called yourself Jen. And then the other one was object relations. And so I learned about these things that not that I wouldn't have been taught, but I felt like it was very in depth and watching the process. So I felt so interested in Ericksonian therapy, you know, and so I felt these experiences that Adler pushed students to do led me to more things. And so, so I felt that was really interesting. And then, you know, the second part of your question, do I use it? I love using goals is the hallmark of the therapy that I do with my clients, is that they leave the first session knowing we have goals and then we agree on them, and then we work on them. But there's no chart or anything, like there's no like sticker chart. But we think about what the goals are, like what we're going to get out of this therapy session. And I also use those personally in my personal life. I like to really always have some kind of goal. What am I working towards? Even if it's like, I'm going to do the laundry. You know what I mean? It's like, this is a goal for today. What about you, Jen? What are your thoughts?
I would agree completely. I think when I was at Adler, part of why I would gravitated towards doing the CBT certificate was I felt as a newbie, as somebody who didn't have a whole lot of experience, that I felt I needed this tool kit, that I needed to like build my little toolbox of what am I going to do in therapy. And so I did the CBT certificate because it gave me some added tools. And then like Jessica said, you're in your practicums, you're in your trainings. And even afterwards, working with different people who come from different theoretical frameworks, you start to kind of, I felt like I started to take a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And I worked a lot with DBT, dialectical behavioral therapy, and have some ACT experience. And so I pull from those and realize that there's this kind of common thread that falls through all of them, and that you kind of then really start to look at like, this is how I'm going to visualize, this is how I'm going to conceptualize the person, this is how I'm going to conceptualize what we need to do and kind of how we guide ourselves, but really then start to kind of work on how can I help them understand what's going on and how can I convey that to them. And so I feel like Adlerian kind of gave me my like bones, it gave me the framework. And then just use that to kind of build, because especially in the beginning, I felt like I needed to have this tool chest, that I needed to have things that I could use to make me feel like I was being productive in the session, and then just kind of developed from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard that from a lot of graduating folks, probably across degree programs. Need to have something to pull from. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So...
Dr. Paskowitz, what is something that you wish people knew about your work or about even applying, let's say, because we've been talking about graduate programs a little bit and you've been giving us an amazing primer, mm-hmm. I guess, of what people would experience, you know, if you're in graduate school or what you could study. But let's talk about maybe the people that before they get to that place, what would you wish they knew, like before they send the application to Adler?
I think that it's probably, I would encourage anyone who's thinking about grad school, is that the question?
Yeah.
I would say to do some homework. So now you're hearing us talk about that there are different fields and different disciplines, and it's really, there are so many different kinds of degree programs to consider. Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked about couple and family mm-hmm. therapy, art therapy, counseling, psychology, public policy, like all these different choices. Like what are they all, to go onto different institutions' websites yeah. and go and read about it and see if it fits. Look at the mission mm-hmm. of the institution and see if it calls to you. You know, there are a lot of institutions who are very mission consistent, like Adler, that we mean it when we say that we are really committed to graduating socially responsible practitioners. Mm-hmm. We're focused on social justice and tackling inequities and whatever that looks like in your discipline. There are others who are more broad, and that might be okay for you, but take a look at that and interview in different places, mm-hmm. apply to different places, because I really think, just like finding a good therapist, finding a good graduate program is mm-hmm. essential, and you'll know right. it. I mean, you might be, I remember when I was interviewing, I mean, back in the day, a long time ago, but I remember, you know, even, you know, you get the vibe of like, wow, this could really be a place where I can really challenge myself. Cause as the two of you know, graduate school, you learn more mm-hmm. about yourself oh, yeah. than anything. I mean, I was a different person when I walked in mm-hmm. and when I walked out. Completely. I grew up a ton learning about myself and my biases and mm-hmm. my, you know, kind of what I believed in, what I knew about and didn't. And so you got to find a place that you can let that happen, because the students that come in thinking they're a finished product, or that they just need the book knowledge mm-hmm. in a mental health program of any kind, like you should expect to be challenged to really take a look at yourself, and because you're the tool in therapy, you are the, you know, you're the instrument. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't know yourself, how can you help somebody else? So, and that includes the good, yep. bad, and the ugly about you. You got to know it all.
I love that.
Yeah. Or at least begin to. So that's kind of what we say, honestly, yeah. when I talk to incoming students on orientation day, is like, congratulations, you made it in.
Wow.
You're going to be pissed at us. There's times you're going to be really pissed, because we're going to be like, you should look at that privilege or that bias or that, you know, the way that you're speaking to whomever mm-hmm. or the way that you're thinking about that client or not thinking about that client. So I would say, yeah, do your homework. And look for that fit. Yeah. Does that resonate with the two of you when you think about?
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I remember that very clearly once after one of my practicum, you know, meeting that I had with someone, and actually I remember the professor very well. I'll tell you guys when I'm done. She's amazing. But she really said to me, like, what, why didn't you see that? like, why didn't you see this was yeah. going on? And you know what? Mm-hmm. She was absolutely right. Totally. Blind spot. And everyone has a blind mm-hmm. spot. Everyone has, like, you mm-hmm. know, something that they have to look at. So now it's something that, had she not said that, I would have had that blind spot forever, because nobody, unless somebody really cares to supervise and help you be the best therapist that you can be and best student and just best, you know, person, you know, mm-hmm. that you can be, which is the education I got at Adler. I would not have known that. I mean, people need to yeah. kind of point that out, you know, so.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think as people, mm-hmm. we yep. always kind of need to be looking at ourselves and what, mm-hmm. you know, kind of what biases we are projecting, you know, what blind spots do we have? And I think as people, that's how we just need to continue to grow and evolve ourselves.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Mm-hmm. I would agree. Yep. So I guess that would probably be just, I can't think of anything else I would say about grad school, about the commitments. I think that sometimes people feel like they have to go right for the doctorate, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of things you can do with a master's degree. Master's level folks get licensed independently. Mm-hmm. And so you don't have to make that 5-year, 4 to 5 year commitment for a doctorate right off the bat. I think that there's a lot of people that benefit from starting with a master's program to really see, is this the commitment I want to make? Is this for me? And mm-hmm. it's expensive. Education, higher ed education, is, you know, yeah. can be expensive. So it's an investment. So I would just say, think about that too, that, you know, a master's degree is awesome and can allow you to do a lot of things, doing therapy, doing counseling, you know, and then the doctorate probably opens up a few more doors, mm-hmm. but not everybody wants mm-hmm. to do all, like psychological assessment right. or teaching at the graduate level or, you know, so yeah, that's just reflect on that.
Wow. You guys, this has been, we've taken up maybe now an hour of time, Dr. Pascoe. Thank you.
It does fly.
It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Well, we,
I really enjoyed it.
We definitely enjoyed talking with you and spending this time with you, Dr. Pascowitz. And we want to thank you for your insight today. If people would want to find you, where would be the best way that we can help connect people with you? If they have more questions about kind of graduate process, the graduate school process, or just kind of anything that we talked about today.
Yeah, I would welcome it. I love having these conversations. And again, thanks for having me on. I can be reached. My email address is P as in Paul, A, S as in Sam, Z, K, P-A-S-Z-K at adler.edu. You can just go to the Adler website and find me there. It's www.adler.edu. Short and sweet.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Thank you for your time. And we will be in touch soon because I know we have other topics that we have to discuss. And thank you for coming on today.
Yes, thank you so much. It's great to talk to the two of you, and I hope you have a good day.
Thanks, you too. Okay.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed this podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us wherever you listen to good podcasts. And keep up with episode updates on Instagram at therapy_podcast_. There you can send us messages on topics you'd like to hear about or anything that comes to mind. Bye for now.